WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we return here on Monday Night Talk with, of course... the unofficial co-host, at least for this segment. One of these days, we'll have to pry a little bit more time away from Casey Sherman to have him come in and we'll plan a show around Casey and have him in and be an unofficial co-host of Monday Night Talk and sit in and ask, because you're talking about a guy who, now he's done this as a CBS producer, a guy who, you know, writes books, who has to ask questions and wants to, you know, put something forth that is compelling. So
that's right. And, you know, I always enjoy my time here, Kevin. I'm a writer, but I also consider myself a performer as well. You know, I'm the son of an Irish storyteller. So I think that really comes through in my writing. You know, it's not, there's a lot of information, obviously. I want to educate the audience, but I also want to entertain them. That is, you know, key number one, because if you entertain them, then they will absorb and learn the information that you're imparting, whether it be a book, a movie, or a stage show.
Yes, and that's a great segue, because this coming Wednesday, March 8th, in case you haven't had a chance to look at the calendar, Casey is putting on a thrilling one-man show, Tales of Suspense. Give us the details behind this.
Sure. Well, first of all, it's a charity performance for Furnace Brook Middle School. And the eighth graders every year here in Marshfield, they go to Washington, D.C. for a few days to see all the historical sites, to learn a little bit more about American history. My oldest daughter, Isabella, who's now a 10th grader at the high school, she went on the trip a few years ago. My youngest, Mia, is in eighth grade. She's going on the trip this year. And it's a valuable experience for these kids. And I want to make sure that every child in Marshfield gets the opportunity to enjoy a trip like this and learn from it. I've got a great relationship with Furnace Brook Middle School. A couple of years ago, they selected my book, The Finest Hours, for their One Book, One School project, where they read the book for an entire year. They incorporated the lessons of that Coast Guard rescue into their curriculum. So the relationship I've maintained with them has been pretty strong. And, you know, when I knew that they needed some money to help fund this trip, because it is quite costly, I said, you know what? I'm going to bring my Boston stage show, Tales of Suspense, down to Marshfield for one night only. And the stage show is called Tales of Suspense. And basically what it is I take the audience through all of my criminal investigations, all of my breathtaking and thrilling stories that I put on page or even on screen with The Finest Hours and Patriots Day. It's a 60 to 90 minute performance, and it's not a lecture. It's a storytelling show. As I said, I'm a performer. I love to get up in front of an audience and impart these really anecdotal stories that I think will fascinate the audience. You'll be terrified. You'll laugh. You'll cry. You'll have emotions when you watch this show, and I love doing it.
And these are, they're authentic. These are real stories.
These are true stories.
These are true stories.
You know, and obviously—
Which are fascinating.
Exactly. Truth is always stranger than fiction. I'm going to take people behind the scenes, not only of all the books that I've written, whether it be The Finest Hours, A Rose for Mary, The Hunt for the Real Boston Strangler, which is about my reinvestigation to my Aunt Mary Sullivan's 1964 murder at the hands of the Boston Strangler. Boston Strong, which is about the Boston Marathon bombings that was later adapted into the film this year, Patriots Day. You know, Dave Wedge, my co-author on that project, we spent, you know, well over a year with the survivors and the heroes, you know, from this tragedy. And there are stories that I'll weave into the narrative that night that I trust you. You will be inspired when you leave this show.
And I just want to remind folks, is it one little inkling, if you paid attention, other than the gaffe that happened at the end of the show, that an individual who was in a movie, you know, the book was featured, Casey Affleck, winning
Best Actor. I mean, it was amazing. And he was filming Manchester by the Sea at approximately the same time as he was filming my movie, The Finest Hours. I get to spend a lot of time with Casey personally. I took him and a few other cast members to batting practice at Fenway Park for the day. And Casey had worked as a vendor at Fenway when he was a teenager, you know, hawking peanuts and hot dogs and sodas. But it was the first time that he had actually been on the field to take a few whacks at batting practice, and we had a great time. And he's a real humble, down-to-earth kind of guy, and he's just, you know, one of the most talented actors you could possibly imagine. So I hope that we work together again.
No longer the little brother of Ben.
As a little brother myself, I understand the shadow that an older brother can cast. My brother's 4 years older to the day that I am, and growing up, you're always known as so-and-so's little brother.
Yep.
And, you know, the other Casey certainly felt that and saw his brother's initial success. But here's also a guy that, in my opinion, never really cared about that stuff. You know, he was really into the work, and he really carved out a great career as a character actor. And then he was thrust into this leading actor position by his friend Matt Damon, who happened to be the producer of Manchester by the Sea. And he just knocked it out of the park, as I knew he would.
Definitely fantastic. Again, we are speaking with not only Marshfield resident, but a New York Times bestselling author, Casey Sherman, talking a little bit about his one-man show that's going to be taking place this Wednesday night, 7 p.m. at the Marshfield High School Auditorium, as he weaves his way through the numerous books that he has, the stories that he has told from the Boston Strangler to reinvestigating that to The Finest Hours, which was a Disney movie, to Patriots Day, which was a heart-wrenching movie about heroism and the people who came together, you know, during times here where we're living day to day wondering what's going to happen if we go into a public place and if there's going to be a threat of violence.
Well, you know, President Trump, you know, mentioned Boston in his speech to Congress last week.
Yep.
And, you know, it's something that certainly stays on the mind with everybody here. And it's always a great reminder for somebody like me or my co-author, Dave Wedge, to share these stories and continuously share these stories of these survivors, because every day is Marathon Monday. Yep. For these people that don't have children, that sure. don't have limbs, that have lost pieces of themselves, yet found a strength to persevere. And that's what we really focus on. That's what we focused on in Boston Strong. That's what we focused on in the film Patriots Day. It's how a community can come together. As I said, my show, Tales of Suspense, I've been performing this show for about 10 years. I performed it on stages in Boston, the Wilbur Theater, for example. I did a show.
Fantastic venue.
Yeah, it's a fantastic venue, and it's very historic because, you know, that's where Marlon Brando first performed Streetcar Named Desire. And right. to be on that same stage is a surreal experience. But it's a thrilling experience for the audience too, because they don't really know what they're going to get when they walk in. And then they walk out just being completely thoroughly entertained, learning much more about these stories that I've been involved with than they have previously. And you know, it peaks that storytelling is a dying art in my my view. I, you know, not too many people still do it or do it well. I've been working on this for several years, and I know how to tell a good story. And this is not a lecture. This is literally a performance where, you know, you're going to be clutching the person next to you. I guarantee you that in the audience, whether it's a moment of tenderness or a moment of absolute terror. I'll take you through all those emotions, and at the end of the night, you'll be coming out, as I said, inspired in your own life.
Are you asking folks to purchase tickets in advance? And if so, how can they do that? And will there be tickets at the door?
There will be tickets at the door, and people can go to Marshfield High School Auditorium, 7 o'clock Wednesday night, and that's March 8th, just a couple days from now. Mm-hmm. Tickets are only $15, and we wanted to keep the price point low for parents to come out and just have a couple hours of entertainment and informative learning without breaking the bank. All this money goes to help send these eighth graders to Washington, D.C. so that they can learn more about their history, which I'm very excited about and very excited to be a part of. So, I would say folks show up Wednesday night, March 8th, 7 o'clock, right at the auditorium with your $15 in hand, and you'll get a $50 performance at least from me that night. I guarantee you that.
And I would say this is, think of this trip being a source of enrichment for these kids going down to our nation's capital and seeing the wonders of there's so many things for them to be able to see down there and learn and absorb about our nation's capital and about our history as a country.
Yeah, and Furnace Brook Middle School does such a great job in terms of scheduling visits to a lot of the historical sites, making it a learning experience, but also making it really fun for the kids so that they enjoy it. You know, I hope that a kid goes down to Washington, D.C. and the journalism bug hits them, or, you know, the idea that maybe they can write a story someday. I wish I had that opportunity when I was a kid. I grew up on Cape Cod, and that's where I stayed until I was a teenager. I didn't go on any trips. You know, I think Plymouth Plantation is about as far as my teachers would take me back in the 1970s, and I was happy to be there. Mm. These kids today get
it's
worldly.
So different, because you and I are, I think, right in the same range. It's things are so different, but it's not a bad thing.
No, it's a really good thing, because these kids don't only get the chance to learn from a textbook, they get a chance to actually look and touch and feel history, which is such a difference maker for the way that they approach the world moving forward.
Well, it gives me an opportunity to segue from this fantastic one-man show taking place this coming Wednesday to talking about some of your newest projects, some of the things that you are working on. I know you teased it at the beginning of the program that you and Dave have completed the second project, your second book together, the challenge, the Pete Frates story. And it was announced after the fantastic, probably one of the most epic comebacks in Super Bowl history. Tom Brady, you guys are going to be doing a book and a movie.
Book and a movie on Tom Brady. And it's funny, Kevin, about a year ago, Dave and I, before we took on the Challenge Project, our book Challenge comes out in October of this year. We kicked around the idea of doing something on Deflategate, you know, the palace intrigue of the NFL and the targeting of Tom Brady. But obviously there wasn't that ending that we were looking for. So we put that project on the shelf, really didn't even think about it again. And then Tom Brady brings the Patriots back from 28-3 in Super Bowl 51, shocks the world, redeems himself in the national public's mind. Now, New England obviously has been long supportive of the quarterback, but here's a guy that, you know, got vindication, validation, and now will walk away from the game at some point as the greatest quarterback of all time with all of these extraneous external pressures, demands, controversies, and attacks. We thought, okay, there's a lot of pathos in a story like that. Mm-hmm. That's a story that that is worth telling. If we can tell it the right way, if we can really do a character study of who Brady is. A lot of people say, oh, well, we watched the Super Bowl. Why would we want to watch it again on the big screen? Well, the Super Bowl is kind of the denouement of the story. What really is the driving force of the narrative is the journey. It's not where you end up. It's so, how you get there.
So how do you start? Because me, if I'm thinking outside the box here, as I like to do from time to time, I would have to think, and you and I were talking off air, and nobody wants to see the Brady Six and how he was drafted 199. Everybody knows that story all too well. Would it start with the Mo Lewis hit to Drew Bledsoe? Because I'm sure that Tom is sending Mo Lewis Christmas cards
yeah,
to
exactly.
this day.
Right, right. I think, you know, the book and the film obviously will start a little differently. I think the film will concentrate on that period of time, between, you know, from 2014, the locker room at Gillette Stadium before the AFC Championship of the Colts,
sure,
and the beginning of the Deflategate controversy all the way through the Super Bowl. But, you know, through that that journey, you have to find out who this guy Brady was. Now, you and I know the story of the Brady Six, drafted 199 in the NFL draft. People around the country, yep, really, they either don't know it or they've forgotten it. They look at Tom Brady as this guy who's got everything. He's got the supermodel wife. He's got the great career. He's got the great life. But in his mind, at least from our point of view, he still thinks of himself as that 199th pick. He still thinks of himself as the quarterback who couldn't break the starting lineup at the University of Michigan. That drives him.
Right, he maintains that hunger.
Yeah, exactly, and that you know, he's confident in his skills, but I don't think he's confident in the way he's perceived by those around him, and that adds fuel to his fire.
Yeah, there's always been question marks. And just a reference, now sports fans got the whole Mo Lewis thing. That was the hit on Drew Bledsoe that was during the New York Jets Patriots game that knocked Drew Bledsoe out of the game, and that was the start of Tom Brady coming off the bench and you know, having a fantastic season that year. I think he got injured towards the end. He got injured during the playoffs. Drew did step in, I think, for
the AFC Pittsburgh Championship game, yeah, in Pittsburgh, and yeah, played that game, and they won. Yeah. Granted, Bledsoe threw a couple of passes.
He got confused with the jersey.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, that hit that Mo Lewis put on Bledsoe really began the Patriots dynasty.
Absolutely.
You know, we all remember growing up here in New England what a laughingstock the Patriots were and had been for their entire history, you know, even when they reached the Super Bowl in 85 and get steamrolled by the Bears, or they reached the Super Bowl in 96, yeah, and, you know, Parcells was already out the door.
Right.
So that was where the, you know, the controversy lay during that week, and the, you know, the game was an afterthought. And they got beat by the Packers. So, you know, we were, as a mindset of, you know, casual or rabid fans, we're just lucky to be there. You know, Brady, Belichick, they changed all that. Kraft, they changed all that. But it really starts with the quarterback. Had they had some other quarterback in that position, they wouldn't be as successful as they are today.
Yeah, absolutely. Nail, meat, hammer, because basically you're hitting the nail on the head here. Prior to Tom Brady being, you know, matched up with Bill Belichick as head coach, Bill had not been oh so successful. I want to say that the prior season to Tom Brady starting, I think the team was 5-11.
5-11.
5-11.
You know, he failed.
It wasn't looking too good.
No, exactly. His lifespan as a Patriots coach was probably, if he didn't turn things around in the next couple of years, nobody would remember him as a Patriots coach. And he eventually has now become the greatest coach in the history possibly of all sports.
Right, and as a duo. And I'm going to look forward to how you guys lay that out. I mean, you're talking seven Super Bowls between between the two of them. I know two of them, the nemesis, the New York Giants. I mean, you know, they were within, you know, those were tight games. And
Brady left the field in each game with his team ahead. Defense couldn't save the game for him. So he ultimately could have seven Super Bowls right now. But what I love about this past Super Bowl was that, you know, people that hated Brady nationally, and a lot of people do because he's just too successful, they, I believe, started to come around as they're watching him claw back. Yeah. And then everybody becomes a Brady fan, just for maybe for those two quarters. But they were watching this man unfold and do something that nobody had ever done in the history of the sport. And I think you have to appreciate that as a national audience.
Where do things stand as far as you and Dave laying stuff out at this point in time? Again, you made the announcement. What happens now in the process? Will you guys, whether it's you're putting the book together, and then from that you'll generate your material for the movie? How are you doing that?
We see this movie on a fast track, and so does Hollywood. So we're going to be going out to Hollywood probably within 2 weeks to finalize, we hope, the movie deal.
Wow.
The script will be written almost simultaneously as the book. Will be handing our material, our pages, to the screenwriters, because, from what we understand from all of our conversations with our agents, is that Hollywood wants to jump on this, and they want to jump on this quick. So I would expect the film, if it is made, to be on screens nationwide and worldwide within 3 years.
Wow. Now, what are the chances? I know that you have been successful in having Mark Wahlberg, be on board for the Boston Strong book, and that, of course, that material was in so to speak, that's where Patriots Day came from.
Sure, absolutely.
And so, I can't think of any celebrity other than Ben Affleck who is a bigger Brady fan.
You know, I'm going to defer comment on that for at least a while until we finalize things with the studio. But I will say that a lot of directors, either they're Patriots fans or they're just fans of sport or fans of a great story, have approached us and want to work with us. So it's a great problem to have.
Casey, I want to thank you so much for joining us this evening and talking not only about the fantastic one-man show that you're going to be doing over at the high school on Wednesday.
On Wednesday, come see
me. Give the details, please, real quick.
Yep. Tales of Suspense, my one-man show, Marshfield High School, March 8th at 7 o'clock. All proceeds go to the middle school field trip in Marshfield to Washington, D.C. You get a chance to listen to a great show, hear my stories, but also meet me as well. And there's a Q&A session after the show that is always very engaging and very lively.
And if folks want to follow along, I mean, do you have a page already as far as for whether it's for the production company,
yeah,
whether it's for yourself?
Yeah, WittaProductions.com, and Witta Productions is the name of our production company,
yep.
And that is the name of a pirate ship that was recovered off Cape Cod. We're also doing a movie on that.
I was going to say that something else.
But Witta is spelled WHYDAH, Productions.com. You can check out all of our information and updates on all of our projects there.
And we thank you for you and Dave again, back to back. Great having both of you on here to talk about these projects and also talk about some of the things you're doing in the community to help those eighth graders.
Well, that's what it comes down to. Yeah, you know, my kids have been part of that process. My eighth grader is going to be a part of that trip, and I want every eighth grader to experience that. Challenge comes out in October. Above and Beyond, my Cuban Missile Crisis book with Michael Togas, who I wrote The Finest Hours with. That also comes out later this year. I'm just about finished with that manuscript. So busy, 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 Kevin.
Well, we'll look forward to having you back in for more updates. Whether it's about where things stand with Tom Brady, the Tom Brady book, the book you're doing with Michael, and a lot more that's going on with you, Casey.
That'd be great. I'd love to hang out.
You got it. There he is, a Casey Sherman here on Monday Night Talk. We will step aside just for a moment when we come back. More Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, Chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Thank you for staying with us here on Monday Night Talk. As I teased you, it's the first Monday Night Talk of March. I can't believe we're already in March. And with March, we like to invite our friends in from PAC TV. And we also like to talk a little bit about the Plymouth Rotary auction. And I tend to lean on good friend Donna Rodriguez, who is, boy, what don't you do down at PAC TV?
Well, you know, it's a nonprofit, and everybody who works for a nonprofit knows that we all do everything.
Yes.
that's just part of who we are. And the Plymouth Rotary Auction is one of our biggest events of the year, and we are so excited. It's coming up soon.
Now, what we like to do on occasion like this is to make sure that we have you and Donna, because you are kind of the glue here. But we also like to have some of the folks in from the Rotary. Let's give a little love to the individual because of when we're doing this. It's that time of year because the auction is later on this week.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, we're in the week. It's happening on Friday. We cannot wait. And the most exciting thing about this event is it's two organizations working hand in hand. So PAC TV handles the production end and makes sure it looks good and it gets out to everybody, all of our viewers. And the Rotary Club makes sure everything else happens. They are the reason that this auction happens every year. And Patrick O'Flaherty is the auction chair this year. He is busy getting everything ready for Friday, so he's not able to join us. But he and his entire team and the entire Rotary Club, as well as the Morning Club in Plymouth, have been working together to get everything ready. It's going to be an amazing Rotary auction this year.
When is it? Just folks who don't know, maybe they've never heard this segment before, maybe they don't watch TV. What is the auction, the Plymouth Rotary auction, all about that airs specifically on PAC TV, and I think it's streamed too.
It is. It airs on PAC TV. It actually is. Anybody who lives in Plymouth, Kingston, Duxbury, Pembroke, Carver, and Marshfield are going to be able to see it on Comcast and Verizon. It airs Friday, March 10th from 6 to 9 p.m., and then Saturday and Sunday from noon to somewhere between 9 and 10 once we're done selling all of the amazing things that have been donated. But people can also watch it streamed online on pactv.org or PlymouthRotaryAuction.com. Now, the auction is the biggest fundraiser of the year for the Plymouth Rotary Club. Their motto is service above self, so everything they do is working together to give back to their communities. The 100% of the money that is raised and everything that people bid on, all of that money goes right back out into the community for scholarships, for grants, and for also international work.
This has been a partnership that's been in the works for 16 years.
I've been doing this for 16 years. I think it's been 18 years that PAC TV's been working with the auction, and it's the 22nd annual auction. Do you know they've raised over $1 million?
How cool was that? How unique and cool is that, that you're part of an event that reaches so many people, and it also helps probably just as many.
And, you know, myself, the rest of the staff, and all of our volunteers, PAC TV itself has an average of 22 volunteers over the weekend who come and give their time to help to produce this auction. The Rotary auction has over 80 people who come in every single year to work to make this happen. So to be a part of an event that is so big and so fun and is also giving back is really a pleasure.
I have to say, myself, being a Duxbury resident, which means I am in the PAC TV viewer area, I watch it. I've watched it over the past couple of years, and I've had
a fun.
It is fun, and I've been invited a few times, but I've myself not only timing when able to be able to, but I also kind of realized seeing my good friend, my colleague here at WATD, Rob Hakala,
doing it. He does a great job.
He does a great job. You have so many folks that you have, whether it's somebody who's a radio personality, whether it's somebody who is from the community, maybe it's an elected official. You have all kinds of folks who come in and who volunteer their time to kind of get folks to give a dollar more.
They do. The most fun is when you start to get those bidding wars happening.
Yeah.
When people on the phones at the phone banks are going back and forth, $1, $3, $5 at a time, and you start to see the numbers increase, yeah. Everybody's enjoying it. The people who win the bids are getting amazing items and services, and then all of the money is going to a good cause. So it's a win-win all the way around.
You look at the production quality, and I said this to you, moments before going on air, the great job that PAC TV does. I watch, like I said, I watch PAC TV. I'm also, don't tell anybody, but I'm a fan of community television.
Access. Everybody should be.
Everybody should be. Not everybody is, because, you know, it's just people are people. But I'm a fan of it. So I watch certain things. I watched the event that you had down at down at the theater.
At the Spire Center, yes, our 200th episode of PAC TV Community News.
Well done. I wouldn't have known that it was an Access production. It was done so well. I think you might have had a Jim in the audience that was flying around and catching it. I saw your husband, Dan. He was a little... He's not somebody who likes to be in front of the microphone, but he did a fantastic job getting up there. You got Nancy...
All of the folks who were a part of really celebrating. That night was a wonderful opportunity to celebrate our community news, to celebrate the stories in our communities that we serve and how important it is to get that information. Now, we don't get to see that on broadcast television. On community television, we get to hear the stories that are happening in our hometowns. Right. We get to see the faces of the people in our communities. So that was really an opportunity to celebrate that and to celebrate 200 episodes of being able to share that. And also, it was the kickoff for the 20th anniversary for PAC TV.
Yeah, you were telling me about that. A very unique idea to celebrate the existence of local television in the Plymouth area. Kind of give folks kind of a tease as to what you guys are going to do to celebrate your 20 years.
Well, this is, in December will be officially the 20th anniversary of PAC TV. PAC TV started off with Nancy Richard, one person in her car. She loves to tell the story that, you know, she started this studio with VCR tapes in the back seat of her car and a file cabinet in her car. Today, it is a community studio that serves four towns. We run six channels. We are able to offer so many different services. And as I said earlier, we're able to tell the stories of the towns that we serve. And we really want to celebrate the people. We want to celebrate the stories. We want to celebrate the communities. So every month throughout this year, we have different special events, new classes. There are all kinds of things that are going to be happening leading up to a huge celebration in December. So if you want to find out more, visit PACTV, PACTV.org. If you don't happen to live in one of our towns, also visit our website and find out about community television. Find out how you can connect in your town.
It's easy to do. If you have a passion for something, you definitely can get involved. Finding our way back to our original conversation and talking
about
the auction. It's so well produced. And again, somebody who watches little idiosyncrasies. I'm a behind the scenes guy. I'm a guy who likes to be in front of the camera, in front of the microphone. Hello.
And you're very good at it.
I try. But it's so well done. And anybody who didn't look at the number would think that it was, you know, a typical broadcast that you would see on another network. It is so well done. Give me your thoughts as to what goes in here. I mean, this week, I'm sure, is your tech week leading up to next weekend's auction. What goes on to make sure that it's flawless and that everything, boards fly in, boards fly out, shots of the folks working the phone banks. Talk to me about that.
Well, it really is a wonderful, as I said earlier, it's a wonderful collaboration between two organizations who are both doing what they do best. The Plymouth Rotary Club is amazing with organizing this auction and all of the details and all of the businesses who support it and donate. They have this down. They've been doing this for 22 years. At PAC TV, we, our staff, our volunteers, take great pride in every single year improving upon what we've done before. We never are ones to sit on our laurels. We are never ones to just phone something in. We want this auction to look as good as anything you would see on broadcast television each and every year. We take great pride in that. It takes hours. It takes, I want to say it takes a village. It takes a lot of people to be able to put this together and many, many hours in pre-production, which isn't as fancy and as exciting as what we see on television.
Right.
But it's the crossing the T's, dotting the I's, and looking at every single detail. We spend 2 days just building the studio out in preparation for everybody to arrive. So we will be starting on Wednesday. We're going to be emptying out our studio, rebuilding everything, relighting everything, and to prepare for Friday night when we go live.
Wow. That's fantastic. Now, folks who are at home going, yeah, I don't care about, you know, I'm not a big fan. I don't care about the production. What if somebody wanted to get an early idea as to some of the things that are up? Maybe they could get in early bidding on stuff. Is that possible?
That's a really good point. Yes, because the Rotary Club does offer online bidding, and they have right now over $85,000 worth of items that have been donated by over 500 area businesses. So it is physical items, it's gift baskets, it is services, and and all kinds of exciting things like the Mirbeau Inn has donated an overnight and two spa treatments. So there are so many things. And for every single price range, just go to PlymouthRotaryAuction.com. You can see pictures of all of the items that are available right now. You can do pre-bidding at this point. And at the actual auction starting Friday the 10th at 6 p.m., people can also watch online and call in their bids. So they can bid during the actual auction while they're watching it streamed.
Do you ever find yourself, you know, again, you've done this long enough where you get an itch to want to get in on the bidding? You see something and go, wow, that's really cool. Maybe I'll get it. Or do you know anybody who works at PAC TV, like, oh, that's pretty cool. Oh, my God, Maui Jim sunglasses? I got to get those.
Are you kidding me? I buy stuff every year. Every single year. I'm online. I check things out. I also, through the website and through wickedlocal.com, and for people who are in the Plymouth area, the Old Colony Memorial, this week, you're going to be able to get an idea of exactly when the items you're interested in are going to be auctioned off. So the Rotary Club offers about a 1 or 2 hour time frame.
That's not bad.
If you want those Maui Jim sunglasses, you can watch at this time on this day, and you'll be in that range for when they're going to be auctioned off. So you can plan your day around it, too, if there are things you really want. And yes, as I said, I buy things every single year.
And again, we're talking with Donna Rodriguez. She is with PAC TV, and we have Donna on once or twice a year to talk about a variety of things. It's kind of a favorite thing of mine to have her on, talk a little bit about the auction.
Thank you.
As a way to give back to the community. That's what we're supposed to do here as a radio station, as media outlets, is find ways to give back to the community and use it for, you know, it's like having a superpower. You use it for good. And so that's what we're trying to do. As we all should. Not everybody does it. You know, some people want to put out, you know, fake news and alternative media. That's up to them to do. It's not our realm. We're here to talk good news, and Donna's here to talk about that. And I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to be able to come on in and talk about this upcoming event that's going to be taking place. And I'm right now on the PlymouthRotaryAuction.com website.
See, he's shopping right now.
I'm shopping right now. Now, I may not be a person who'll get the Coach City tote bag, but I'm looking at this. There's a list of items, like if you're into athletics or automotive, maybe you like beauty or the barbershop. There's gift certificates for that. Computers and electronics, that's
Oh, my gosh. There are restaurant gift certificates. There are spa gift certificates. Pets. There are baskets of beauty items.
Vacations.
And basket of pets items. And, oh, there's anything you can imagine is available. If you want to get your car detailed, if you want to go out to dinner, if you want to have a great date night,
golf.
If you want to go to paint night, you name it, it is there.
Don't talk about paint night. I actually did that with my significant other. The other, we went to McGuigan's and they did it, and you don't mix drinking and painting. It just doesn't work. It really doesn't.
But I bet it made for a fun night.
It did. It did. I'm still trying to figure out what exactly it was that I painted. But again, it was a fantastic paint night at McGuigan's Pub. And well, hopefully we're going to have Richie Rosen on soon to talk about some of the things that they do. But back to talking about the auction. We got just a couple of moments left here. Anything that you want to make sure you can tease or just talk to folks about?
I just want to remind people that, again, everything that you're seeing being auctioned, and if you're having fun with a bidding war, if you see something that'd be perfect for your husband or wife or best friend for their birthday, every single penny you spend at the auction goes right back out to the community. All of the costs of the auction are covered by our amazing corporate sponsors. So every single bid goes right back into the community for scholarships, for donations, to help worthwhile organizations that are helping all of our towns be a better place to live, work, and learn.
Amen. I'm going to throw some information out here. You can tell me if
Perfect.
I'm correct.
Thank
I want to
you.
Make sure. If you have any information, if you happen to be scanning the PlymouthRotaryAuction.com website, they tell you if you have a question, you can email info@PlymouthRotaryAuction.com. You can call 508, get your pen. I'll wait, 508-591-3209. Now, when it goes on air, they can call 508-927-4885 to bid. Is that correct?
Yes, and sometimes those numbers do get updated. So I would like to remind everybody, take a look at your newspapers if you're in our local communities. Go to pactv.org or plymouthrotaryauction.com to get the most up-to-date information. If anything changes between now and Friday night at 6 o'clock when we go live, we want to make sure you can get your bid in.
And are we looking to, is it like the Jerry, I say this one when it comes to fundraisers, are we trying to do the old muscular dystrophy, Jerry Lewis, $1 more? Is it just a matter of have fun and raise as much money as possible? Because so much money has been raised over the years.
Oh my gosh, over $1 million, and the numbers increase every single year, and we want to raise as much as we can to do as much as we can. We are so thankful for our viewers, for our bidders, for our businesses, and for people like you who help to promote this auction.
How about volunteers? Are you in need of any volunteers?
Always.
Okay.
Always. If anybody wants to volunteer to be a part of it, if anybody still wants to make a donation, they can also contact me at PACTV. My email address is Donna, D-O-N-N-A, at PACTV, PACTV.org, and I will make sure we get you in the right place.
I'll ask this other question because not everything may not appeal to folks, but if there's a way, an avenue for folks to be able to donate, they want to donate, but they're like, oh, no, there's nothing here that I want to bid on. Does the Rotary accept donations, and how would they do that?
Absolutely. Again, people can just visit the PlymouthRotaryAuction.com.
Okay.
They can email info@PlymouthRotaryAuction.com. They can make a donation to the Rotary Foundation, and all of those funds will go right back out into the community.
Now, do we know if Rob Hackle is going to be doing this coming weekend? And who are some of the celebs? Can you tease anybody who I can at least go, oh, I want to see this person, or I want to see that person?
Well, you know what?
I
will see if I can get the schedule and get that up by Wednesday. So if people want to take a look at it,
Okay. Maybe
we can tease that on the PACTV website. I'll ask if the auction can tease that as well. We've got so many different folks. And as you said, it's local celebrities
Yep. Like
Rob. It is folks who are business leaders and folks who are legislators. Typically, Vinny DiMacito is there. Typically,
Yep. Matt
Moratori is one of the MCs and hosts.
Get Vinny in sometimes, right?
Oh, yes. Vinny comes in all the time.
Okay.
Vinny and Tom O'Brien are there, and it's very fun too. With some of our auctioneers, we start to see some competition between them as well, because some of our auctioneers try to see if they can raise more money than the other person. It becomes a competition there, so it's a lot of fun.
Now, how about your America's Hometown
Thanksgiving
friends?
Celebration? Yes,
yeah.
Ollie DiMacito.
Is Ollie involved with this too?
Ollie has donated some amazing, and he does it every year. Mm-hmm. Some amazing box seats for the Red Sox.
Wow.
So take a look online and find out when those are going to be auctioned. He is always a huge contributor. And the Rotary Club also supports America's Hometown. They're one of the organizations that receive donations every year.
Mm.
And the folks in the Rotary Club help to raise money at the parade itself every year, the weekend before Thanksgiving.
That Ollie, he's a good egg.
He is. And he and his committee and all of their supporters do so much to support the Plymouth area and really celebrate Thanksgiving and the history of our community.
Donna, thank you so much for coming in, making time to at least, again, promote this fantastic event and also promote some of the things that your colleagues do down at PACTV.
Thank you. And as always, we are thrilled to be here. And thank you for helping us get the word out. And don't forget to watch March 10th through 12th.
There you go. You are listening to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere. Keep your radio dial set right here.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Peter, it was always Tiny's intention to have a Tiny and Sons business.
That's true. We always worked well together, but my mom had a lot to do with it. I think she wanted us out of the house. She really needed her peace and quiet.
Five kids, you really can't blame her.
Tiny taught us how to get along and work together. And most important, mother knows best.
Did you learn anything about windshields?
That too, but you really get used to doing a good job. You know Tiny's gonna check it out.
My boys do a good job.
My dad did a great job. One, 888-64-TINY. Just call.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
We return for the second hour of Monday Night Talk. We thank you for keeping your radio dial set here. We do our best to make sure that some of the conversation that we have, okay, so we don't get into arguments and there isn't a shouting match every segment, but we like to have folks on who can at least be compelling and give us good information, could be boots on the ground for a particular topic or subject. Gentleman who is joining me, a good friend, and go easy on him. He's an Oakland A's fan, and we're not predicting a good season for them. I think they'll start trading away players in May. I'm not sure, but we have none other than, I call him fondly, our D.C. correspondent, former 95.9 WATD anchor, Steve Burns, who is now with WMAL down in D.C.
Hey, good evening, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, sir. How are you?
I was doing well until you predicted all my teams going away in May, but that's okay.
Well, I mean, are you still a believer in Billy Beanball?
Billy Bean's kind of divisive right now. I mean, he had his heyday back in the early 2000s, but I don't know. He kind of lost his mojo a little bit. I'm unsure about this year. We'll see.
Okay. Well, I mean, you never know. I mean, he's always found a way to tap into a fresh crop of talent. And, you know, I think, you know, there's an ebb and a flow when it comes to sports and being able to pick talent and have it, you know, you can have that talent, but for it to come to fruition and to be realized is another thing.
That's the big thing. Yeah. Well, here in D.C., just like you guys are in Boston, there's a lot of high expectations for the Nationals. I don't know how anyone can beat the rotation you guys will have up at Fenway. That's just insane.
Yeah, well, we're already hearing stuff about Hanley Ramirez, who is he is the heir apparent to David Ortiz, and he's talking about playing in the WBC, you know, the World Baseball Classic, and he's got shoulder issues, and I don't know.
All the usual stuff, yeah. Hopefully we don't see a repeat of 2011. Lest I mention that year.
Yes. No, please don't. Please don't. And again, Steve is not on here. We're not here to talk baseball. It's just he and I have a kinship when it comes to sports and hanging out and talking about sports. So if we slip into it and an analogy pops up, well, it'll be, you know, an infield fly rule and Steve will get it, of course. But no, he's here. I thought I would have Steve on just to talk a little bit about since the last time we had him on the program, just to kind of get a feel from, you know, the new administration, Inauguration Day, there were protests going on, dust has settled a little bit, and I think since that conversation, I think probably the one thing that sticks out in my mind is the very first speech that our president gave before Congress. If you had to sit here and give a grade as to, you've had a chance to look at it and say to yourself, what would you say?
Yeah, it's kind of been, he kind of has at this point maybe understood the magnitude of the office a little bit more than he has in the past after that speech he gave to a joint session of Congress. It would be the de facto State of the Union, but since he's still within his first month or two in office, it isn't quite the State of the Union, but it's basically the same thing. You could tell the speech was definitely an attempt to make more of a bridge of sorts to Republicans and Democrats, try and make a more unifying tone if he could. Then you have the detractors who also say it's just the same guy who has now learned to use a teleprompter and not to expect anything new out of him. Of course, there was a very powerful moment when the entire chamber stood up and recognized the widow of Ryan Owens, who was killed in a raid operation in Yemen.
Yep.
And there was that extremely powerful and extended standing ovation for the widow. And a lot of people are pointing to that as possibly what could be a turning point in how President Trump views the office and views the magnitude of his powers. But as far as the usual criticisms that we see from President Trump, that he's too brash, too informal, doesn't really understand the power that he holds in the White House, the speech from that night really may have put a dent in those criticisms. But again, you also have some of the same detractors saying it's the same guy, he was just using a teleprompter this time, so don't get too comfortable.
Well, and it's let's call it what it is, and that is that Donald Trump has not, you know, he is not best friends with the Fourth Estate, with the media. I mean, it's, you know, up until that point, it's been an ongoing war with, you know, certain media organizations and outlets where he's called them out. And you know, if anything, I think that those outlets, I think the media itself, they were licking their chops. They were looking to pounce on any missteps he may have had during his speech.
Right, and this may have been the first speech that he didn't outright criticize the media since possibly his campaign started 2 years ago now. So it may, again, have been a turning point. But like I told you last time, I think that his criticisms of the media have only emboldened them further to make sure they have their facts right, make sure they get as many sources as possible to back up those facts from as many different organizations and backgrounds as possible. But yeah, that speech that night, there was really almost no mention of the media. So some of his supporters that latched on to his criticisms of the media may have been even disappointed by the lack of a mention. But for those that are looking for him to be a bit more presidential and understand, again, the magnitudes of the office, that lack of a mention may have given them a little more confidence.
What did you hear early on, you know, the following day in regards to the speech? Was there a lot of chatter on MAL as to, you know, how well the president did, or that this was unexpected?
It was definitely, I wouldn't call it unexpected, but there was just a lot of uncertainty about how this would go. Because we had his inauguration speech on Inauguration Day, and he kept on with some of the same themes that he had mentioned all the time during the campaign about, you know, all the carnage and how sort of dark of a period America is in right now. So maybe some people were expecting a lot of the same in the joint session speech, but it really turned into a little more of an uplifting kind of theme, especially after the big ovation for Ryan Owens' widow. The vast majority of reviews on MAL have been positive. Again, a lot of people saying that this may be the turning point for where he understands the magnitude of his powers.
Again, we are speaking with Mr. Steve Burns, a former 95.9 WATD alum, now down at WMAL in D.C., as he's their anchor and an occasional reporter, too. You go out and cover stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm out during the week covering all kinds of local issues. I'm less on the national politics when I'm out reporting. We actually just had most of my reports for the last week focused on the panda, the national zoo that has now departed.
Where did the panda go?
The panda went to China. The U.S. and China have a breeding agreement. When the panda turns three, we have to hand the panda over to China. So we said goodbye to our dear Bao Bao a couple weeks ago.
Oh, now did the panda come with any tariffs? Because I know that there's going to be a lot of change when it comes to how we do trade with other countries.
Unless you count stacks and stacks of bamboo as tariffs, she had plenty of food to eat on the 16-hour flight.
Okay.
But besides that, no, I don't think so.
Okay. Any thoughts on where we go from here? It seems as though the president has softened his stance, so to speak, in regards to immigration reform. He has softened his stance about outright replacement of the Affordable Care Act, but that there has to be a way to transition away from it to something new, that there has to be something in place. And, of course, the wall is going to be huge.
He's walking a thin line here, as far as I can tell. I mean, if he deviates too far away from his campaign promises, then he risks losing that group of core supporters that really propelled him through the primary and through the general election. And based on how just different he's been, how outlandish his whole candidacy has been, I don't see him winning the support of too many Democrats, no matter how far left his policies start going. So again, yeah, he's really walking a thin line here. If his policies start going more towards the middle, then he might lose both his supporters on the far right and any possibility of supporters more onto the left.
You don't think, I mean, he used key words like infrastructure. I don't know who taught him that, but that's easily a $3 or $4 word. And that's something that I think that can get the attention of Democrats. And I saw him pointing to certain Democrats during his speech, one of them being Bernie Sanders, when they talked about health care and making sure that, you know, everybody is taken care of. And, you know, I mean, give me your thoughts. How important will it be for this president to use different items, ideals, legislation that he can somehow, even though he is seen as a Republican president, that he's able to work with the folks across the aisle?
Yeah, infrastructure was the big thing, like the one ray of light that Democrats saw the day after the surprise election of Donald Trump. I remember going to a press conference with the mayor of D.C. the day after Election Day, and it was just doom and gloom. D.C., obviously, the local politicians are filled with Democrats. D.C. is a place where 93% of voters went for Hillary Clinton. It's about the bluest place in the entire country. But infrastructure was mentioned as sort of that one light sliver of hope in the Donald Trump candidacy for Democrats, because they agree that our infrastructure is in a terrible place. But usually when Democrats talk about infrastructure, they're talking about massive federal investment and a massive increase in the amount of jobs that come with infrastructure investment.
Yep.
But when you look at the policy of what Donald Trump and his campaign proposed for infrastructure, it's vastly different from that. He'd like to see a cornerstone of infrastructure be public-private partnerships, which involve a big investment from the private sector. And there's pros and cons to that.
Sure.
But it's not part of the Democrat plan for infrastructure. So even if the infrastructure word is agreeable to both sides, the details that go into that still have to be hashed out, and that could be a battle in itself.
I mean, we look at the past two administrations, and it seemed as though the biggest problem, the toughest bridge to build, was between the two parties, where things weren't stuck along a party line, and it wasn't something that you had to rely on having a majority in Congress or in the Senate, but that you're able to get key members of each, you know, governing body to get on board, no matter if it's a D, an R, if they're a member of the Tea Party or whatever it may be. And I guess I'm just throwing it out there rhetorically. You know, what needs to be done in order for... I mean, I thought he did when he was when Donald Trump was talking about us working together. I hope that's going to be something that he will continue to say, because, you know, soon after he was elected, there was a wide rift. There was a gap that, you know, needs to be closed, not only with our country and a lot of the folks, because I'm sure you pay attention to social media and you see people unfriending each other, you know, because they are, you know, folks who are involved with a particular party, whether they're a Democrat or a Republican. And if a friend is, you know, so emboldened by what Donald Trump says, they get mad and like, that's it, I'm no longer your friend.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, and the polarization, I think, has only gotten worse since Donald Trump got elected. And again, going back to the media, we saw it in polls of how much do you respect and trust the media, both ends of the spectrum saying, I absolutely trust the media and I have no trust in the media. Both those numbers went up, and numbers in the middle of saying I have slight trust in the media or I have slight distrust in the media, those numbers went down. So it's just another anecdotal example of the polarization on both ends of the spectrum going way up. And again, having that middle ground, it's getting tougher to find.
How does that make you feel, you and your colleagues down at WMAL, down in the nation's capital, how does that make you feel when there are questions about, you know, your career, your industry, you know, I mean, there's, you know, over the years, the decades, you know, we have depended on the media to tell us what's going on, be the ones who are the sunshine to, you know, to shine through certain items, you know, to be transparent. How do you feel as a journalist when you hear that, you know, that it's not favorable as to what you do for a job, that you're not trustworthy, not you, but that folks in your field are not trustworthy?
It's definitely been, like I said, an emboldening experience. I don't really feel the need to sort of fight back and give my case against what Donald Trump has been saying.
Yep.
I just feel the need to keep doing my job and let the words I write and speak on the radio speak for themselves. And again, it's all about finding more sources and more facts, and just using your stories as a way to counter what he's saying. Obviously, I know of no colleagues that have made up sources, as he's claimed. That has never been a practice of anyone in journalism outside of what was originally termed fake news. And the term fake news, from a journalism perspective, only applies to those stories that we saw on Facebook around the election that are 100% false and manufactured intentionally to deceive you and to get you to share stories on Facebook and get the owners of those websites the ad revenue that comes with page views. Outside of stories that are intentionally made to deceive you by being 100% false, there hasn't been any fake news from my perspective. It's just an emboldening experience. And again, I have a few journalism friends that feel the need to post things on Facebook saying it's angering me how much of an enemy he's making us out to be. But for me, it's all about letting my work speak for itself, basically.
Hearing you talk about, you know, some of the fake news stories that are posted on social media, there was a time when that would be called propaganda.
Yes. propaganda is, depending on your definition, it could just be stretching the truth. But for the fake news stories we saw right before November, that was intentionally 100% false stories made up by people in who knows where that were just there to generate page views and ad revenue for them.
And is that, do you feel that it's almost as though, you know, since we've seen a split, whether you're somebody who is in the Democratic Party and you have those people who are uber liberal as to those who are moderate liberal, you look at the Republicans where you have those folks who have conservative points of view, and then you have the Tea Party people who are ultra conservative. Do you kind of feel that with when we talk about the media, I mean, let's not forget, you know, you and I, you know, we've learned the rules and regulations of journalism 101, how to report a story, how to get the facts, having people to back up your story, tell the story, so to speak. But nowadays you have folks who are bloggers and people who are just more worried about getting clicks on their page so that whatever social media outlet they're with will give them money, ad revenue.
Right, and that's definitely been something of a problem, the battle in journalism between what people want to know and what people should know.
Yep.
And often those are two very different things.
Yep.
So we're trying to walk that line here ourselves in terms of doing the important stories and the stories that come out of the White House and the Capitol. But again, we also have our panda stories, and they're a little more lighthearted and give people a sense of place here and let people know that D.C. is more than just where the federal government is.
That's right. It's the home of where pandas know they can blossom, they can grow.
Yes.
anything that to kind of set the stage for the next time you and I talk? What do we have coming up in the next couple of weeks that you and I should keep an eye on for a conversation?
Well, outside of baseball season.
Yeah. That's a given.
Yes. It's going to be interesting to see what the first big pieces of legislation come up in Congress are, because, as I'm sure everyone knows, Republicans have been talking about what they'd like to do, but they never had full control of the levers of power as they do now, having both the House, Senate, and the White House under their control. So we've been hearing for all of Barack Obama's presidency, some of George W. Bush's presidency, what Republicans would like to do. Well, now they're in the hot seat, and it's their duty to follow through on some of the things they talked about. So as I'm sure everyone's aware, we'll be watching the possible repeal and replacement of Obamacare.
Yep.
We're starting to see that a lot of the bigger parts of Obamacare, like ignoring pre-existing conditions, having basically the pre-existing conditions, some of the more popular parts of Obamacare we're starting to realize that they may stay in whatever the replacement may be. So it's not going to be a full repeal as was described many, many times before by Republicans. So again, it's whatever they decide to take up first, because they've been talking about this eventual situation of being having all the seats of power here for a long time, and now they finally have it. So it'll be interesting to see what they come up with first.
Here he is, my good friend Steve Burns, anchor reporter down at WMAL in the nation's capital. And we thank you very much for being a reoccurring guest here on the program, even though you're down there.
Yes, it's my pleasure. Always great to talk with you.
Anything you want to say in closing real quick?
Best of luck to your Red Sox. But I hope there's more 2011 in there than what we saw from the Cubs last year.
Okay, let's see what ends up happening. We will continue that conversation. I'm hoping that as spring training breaks, you and I will have a conversation not only as to what's going on down with our president and Congress and any other legislation that may come forth, but also predictions for the season for the teams that we love.
Yes. I wish you all the best up there in Boston.
Yeah, we could use it. Anyway, there he is. Steve Burns joining us here on Monday Night Talk. Of course, that will not be the last that we will hear from our D.C. correspondent, Steve Burns. We will look forward to having him on a somewhat regular basis. It's pretty unique to have somebody who is there covering what's going on in our nation's capital. It's a great resource, and of course, Steve's a great friend, and we love to chat baseball and other things on the side when we have a moment, but definitely look forward to that. Now, at this moment, we are anticipating a phone call any second from State Representative Tom Calter. We get a couple of things to talk with the representative about. First, the latest as to what's going on with the whole Silver Lake water usage with the city of Brockton and some of the other stakeholders. We'll look forward to talking to him about that in just a couple of moments. And as promised, joining us on the phone line is the gentleman who represents the 12th Plymouth District as a state representative, none other than Mr. Tom Calter. Mr. Calter, welcome back to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Kevin, it's great to be with you.
I'm looking forward to our anticipated conversation, as I've already kind of teased the folks, that we'll look to at least find out how you're doing, how life is treating you since the new session started. You can feel free to give us just a little bit of a nugget on that, but then I'd love to get into the new the nuances of a document that was just put forth by the Department of Environmental Protection in the city of Brockton. Of course, this is called a administrative consent order that has been since put into document form, and has, from what I'm hearing, the city of Brockton, the mayor, has signed this. So we could talk about that. But let's first get into how things are going for you. How is life up at the State House?
Things are good, Kevin. It's always exciting starting a new session. We filed 19 pieces of legislation, including the long-awaited legislation, which would require a plan for Brockton to join the MWRA. That will have its day in a hearing room, and the story will be told. But all in all, you know, we're focused already on the new fiscal 18 budget and the constraints that come with that budget.
Mm.
And, you know, there's a particular challenge this year that we don't know what the actions in Washington, what impact the actions in Washington are going to have on federal aid to the state budget. So it's somewhat of a moving target. There's never a day without interesting news, that's for sure.
Well, before the House starts putting together their budget, and of course, doing a tour of the state and getting an idea of where things stand, as they usually do have those public meetings, when will we hear what's going on down in D.C. and how it's going to have an effect financially for when you guys put together your budget to submit for folks to see?
Well, hopefully we know soon. Mm-hmm. It's tough flying a plane without a compass. there's talk of major domestic spending cuts, and that's of great concern. The president has called for a 10% increase in military spending, almost $54 billion, and that's being proposed on the backs of domestic cuts, including to Medicaid and to many of the social services like Head Start that are so important to all of our citizens.
Definitely interesting, and I know that the Affordable Care Act is also something that is right now on the operating table, and there are, hearing last week the president talking about that they're going to have to strip down or do something to replace Obamacare. I'm sure that's going to be something that's going to be have an effect on the FY 2018 budget too.
Well, there's no question, and it's very, very concerning. I hear from my constituents every day about it. You know, it's really disappointing that there are people who support getting rid of Obamacare, but they want to keep the ACA. And when I let them know that it's in fact the same document,
mm-hmm.
it's the same plan, they're shocked. And here's my prediction, and I shouldn't do this. It's going to sound very partisan, and as you know, I'm one of the most bipartisan representatives in the State House.
Yes, sir.
They're not going to replace Obamacare. They don't know how. They've been calling for its repeal and replacement for 8 years, and they've voted more than 30 times to repeal it, knowing they had a president who would veto that. Well, now they have a president who will not veto it, and you notice that they're slow to offer anything up. And all they have is the proposal to transfer a cost to the state and transfer a cost to the individuals who don't have the money to provide health care.
Sounds like sounds like a political story of crying wolf here. Is you cry wolf until you have the opportunity to do something, but yet you don't have the tools or the wherewithal to actually replace it and get everybody on the same page.
It reminds me, Kevin, of the bully in the schoolyard that picked on the young man who can't protect himself every day of the school year. And then on the last day, the young man says, "All right, let's go." and the bully says, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, why? I didn't mean that." And so it's these are very interesting times. I wish our president great success, because his success will be our country's success. Mm. But unfortunately, the Congress has had 8 years to come up with a replacement plan, and they don't have one. Mm. And that's a very sad state of affairs.
Let's talk a little bit about probably the main topic of our conversation before we end the segment, and that is the ACO that was put forth by the DEP, a document that's been much anticipated. I know it has to do a lot with Silver Lake and the stakeholders who are involved, including the one that manages it, the city of Brockton.
Well, I tell you, Kevin, it's a very exciting time. This has been on the top of my agenda now for 4 years, mm-hmm. ever since I became aware of the problem at Wampanoag Pond in Silver Lake. And I, you know, I've been the one who has really been very tough on DEP, on the state of Massachusetts, to step up to the plate and fulfill its obligation to the people of Halifax and of Kingston and Plimpton. And I must now publicly give them credit. For a year, they've been negotiating with Brockton and the terms and conditions of an administrative consent order. And what that is an enforceable document with clear responsibilities that Brockton must meet and penalties for noncompliance. And to the credit of Mayor Carpenter in Brockton, he has signed the document. He recognizes there is a quality and a quantity issue at Wampanoag Pond. And I know you don't want to get into the science of it, but what it requires is a constant flow of water from Wampanoag Pond to Silver Lake, 900,000 gallons a day, which will deal with the stagnation issue and in part solve the algae problem.
Right.
We still have other challenges. There is still phosphorus that's going into the pond from various sources, and part of the responsibility in the ACO is to work closely with the folks who are contributing that phosphorus to the pond. So this deals with the stagnation issue in part, and it calls for constant due diligence in terms of what needs to be done. There are studies, there are timelines, there are investigations. And in addition to that, Brockton has allocated money to start testing the lines that run from Silver Lake to Brockton, which we know are 100 years old. We know are leaking, and we know we're losing waterproof. And those lines will be tested this summer, so there'll be a plan for upgrading those lines, which is probably the greatest conservation measure of all. So without getting into all the details, I know you don't have the time, and it's highly technical stuff. I'm not a good technical guy. It's a great first step towards working collaboratively with Brockton. I thank DEP for facilitating it.
Yep.
And as you know, I filed that legislation to require them long-term to move over to the MWRA. I mean, they've just simply grown out of the Silver Lake. The Silver Lake cannot sustain the amount of water that's taken out to support the city of Brockton. We're going to stick with Brockton. We recognize and respect their rights, and I'm so happy now that they have come to the table to recognize, appreciate, and do something about the quality of water, which is feeding their residents.
Right. If I can ask this, and again, we're speaking with State Representative Tom Coulter, and we're talking about Silver Lake and the issues with that. We know that the city of Brockton actually is on the hook annually for a desalination plant down in Dighton that I know that they're eventually going to, they were at one point in time in the past couple of years looking to buy that desal plant, and we're going to look for a home rule petition to be able to purchase that because it's not within the city of Brockton. It's actually in another community. But do you feel that they're going to use that, hey, we're paying $9 million a year, $10 million a year for X amount of years, and we don't know if we will have the expenses within our budget, our annual budget, to be able to also hook up to the MWRA? Do you feel that that might be something that they try to use as a way to get sympathy from folks up at the State House?
Well, I really hope so, Kevin. That's something that's still a point of contention between myself and the DEP and the city of Brockton. The Aquaria plant's got the capacity to produce 4 million gallons a day. That would be 4 million gallons a day less coming out of Silver Lake, which is about 12 million gallons a day. That would take tremendous stress off of Silver Lake. But that would cost them a unit price per gallon. Right now, the city of Brockton is not paying for water. My town is paying for water. Most towns out of the 351 communities are paying for water. Brockton is not.
Right.
And they don't want their citizens to have to be burdened with that. So I wish I didn't have to pay a mortgage, but I do. So it's one of those things that they view Aquaria as an emergency source should the distribution system, the pipeline break, or should Brockton, should Silver Lake not be able to provide them with enough water. They don't view it as a daily resource. They view it as an emergency resource. I want them to view it as a daily resource and to provide or contribute 4 million gallons a day to the needs of the citizens of Brockton, for which they'd have to pay for it, like the rest of us. So that's still an open issue. It's something we're going to continue to talk about. Again, I want to celebrate the working relationship that has now formed with them. After many years, I've called it like it is and said they're not paying attention, they're not looking at the data, they should be worried about the quality and the quantity of Silver Lake because it's their source. Well, I can now tell you they are looking at the quality, they are looking at the quantity, they're having discussions, they're taking it seriously, so I'm delighted with that, and again, I appreciate DEP's role in moving this needle.
We still got about 5 or 6 minutes left with your representative, if that's okay.
Sure.
And because what I want to kind of get your thoughts on, and not so much staying so much with the ACO document, but looking at what we've experienced over the past 2 years, where we had a large amount of snow a couple of years ago, but now we're in drought conditions. I don't know if the snowfall that we saw this past winter is going to be able to restore the water that was used, because that's what there's an ecosystem that happens where we count on what happens in the wintertime to be able to kind of replenish what we use during the dry months of the year. Any concerns or any thoughts or conversations happening up on the Beacon Hill to talk about the water issue and any anything that can be done regarding future droughts?
Yeah, Kevin, I have great concerns. don't mistake my appreciation for DDP and my enthusiasm for Brockton coming to the table with a lack of concern.
Right.
Silver Lake right now, as we speak today, is down about 90 inches. It's down about 90 inches. If you go to Silver Lake, you see a receding shoreline where there are mussels and fish that are dead on the shore because of the depleted water system.
Right.
We're not having a wet winter. And I met with DEP yesterday in a very long conversation. And I said, you know, tell me what Armageddon looks like. What does it look like? If we have if we don't get any more moisture in the month of March, and then we have a dry spring and a summer comparable to last year, and Silver Lake goes down to 150 inches, and they said it's a grave concern to us. Those were their words.
Right.
That is a grave concern to us. Keep in mind, Brockton uses 12 million gallons a day. Let me make the math very simple for people. Brockton's demand is 12 million gallons a day out of Silver Lake. That water is traveling through a pipeline from Silver Lake to Brockton that is 100 years old. 2 years ago, there was a major break. And the city of Brockton, or a portion of the city of Brockton, was virtually shut off until that water pipe could be repaired. It's 100 years old. Now, in addition to the distribution problems that they're studying this summer, is the reality that the water level in Silver Lake continues to drop every year. As I said, it's about 90 inches below normal right now, when it should be at a high after the winter heading into spring.
Right.
There is no backup plan other than Aquaria. Aquaria produces maximum daily output of 4 million gallons. That leaves 8 million gallons a day for which there is no backup system.
Mm-hmm.
So if the distribution, the piping system breaks, it's 100 years old, or if the water in Silver Lake drops to a level that it cannot feed the pipes, then the DEP has to look to some other backup system, which has been Monpont Pond, but half of Monpont Pond has got so much algae that they can't use the water. So beyond that, there's no backup plan. And that's why I've been so vocal, and not everybody in leadership in Brockton has been happy with me about this. Partially because the people in Brockton need to know about this situation.
Right.
Not only do we have a quality problem, we have a quantity problem. And I don't want there to be a day when people turn their faucets on and nothing comes out.
Right.
And that's why I've raised this issue. It's not a political thing. It's not a grandstanding thing, which some of my colleagues from Brockton have accused me of. It is a reality that they should be talking to their constituents about. And we need to continue now to work together. We now are working together. That's why I'm hopeful. That's why I'm positive. You know, as the late, great Ronald Reagan once said, trust but verify. So the administrative consent order is a path forward, and I feel good about that. But at the same time, I've got to build files and require Brockton to move over to the MWRA over the next several years.
Probably my final question in our conversation with you, Representative, and that would be, will the argument be, when we look later on, when the study is done, how important water and sewer is when it comes to economic development? I know that's one thing that this community is counting on, is being able to build on its current economic development plan, and that means that they need to add more businesses and more residential areas and 40R smart growth districts and stuff like that. How will that hinder any economic development, whether it's in Brockton or any other communities that utilize Silver Lake water?
Kevin, that's a great and very insightful question. Brockton actually uses less water today than it did 5 years ago because there are fewer businesses in Brockton. There are fewer developments in Brockton. So if Brockton is going to grow its economy, if it's going to grow its industrial base, it will need more water. And it's no longer something we can take for granted. And I would argue, if I were arguing before the city council, that an investment in their water system, like the MWRA, would unshackle them to grow their economy. And the money generated from that growing economy would far surpass the cost of signing up to the MWRA. It's a long-term view. It's one that visionary people have to think through. Just trying to, you know, keep it the way it is not good for the long-term perspective of Brock.
Anything you want to say in closing, if folks want to reach out to you, constituents who have a chance to hear you on this radio station, whether it's during, you know, a news report or here on our program?
Well, Kevin, all I'd say is really, it's a tribute to you and to WATD. Right now, there's this great debate on news and fake news. You and I have talked about it at great length.
Yep.
You know, we have an obligation as elected officials, as public policy makers, to share information and so that people can make informed decisions. I'm not the type of person that needs to convince you of my position. I just need to make sure that you've got the information so you can have a strong position of your own.
Right.
And I thank you and I thank WATD for all you do in trying to bring these issues to the people in understandable formats. I spend every day speaking to people about issues and providing them data. It's not important to me that they agree with me, but it is important to me that information. You play a major role in doing that.
Well, we appreciate your time and we appreciate the South Shore. I think we have impeccable legislators who go up there, and they also are not... They're not shy when it comes to being on the radio station and discussing things. So we thank you.
And telling it like this, that's what people deserve, and it's what they're thirsting for.
Well, we look forward to more of that, and we look forward to more conversations with you, Representative.
Thank you, Kevin.
There he is, State Representative Tom Calter, our guest for that segment. Well, it was kind of a back-to-back segment, of course, started with Steve Burns, our D.C. correspondent, and then... State Representative Tom Calter, representing the 12th Plymouth District, chatting with us here on Monday Night Talk. Well, coming up in just a few moments, we are going to speak with Laura Kemet, and she is going to talk to us about a great St. Patrick's Day event that is coming up that they're going to be holding at the Needles Lodge in Hanson, Massachusetts. Actually, the Needles Lodge is at Camp Kewaunee, but we're going to speak with Laura Fitzgerald Kemet in just a few moments here on Monday Night Talk. So please don't go anywhere. You are listening to 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
Daddy, Daddy, I used a tea kettle to melt the ice off your windshield. Now there's beautiful and pretty crisscrosses and sparkly spider webs all over the windshield.
What?
Can we do Mom's too? Can we?
Oh. Windshield broken? My boys do a good job.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINIES. Just call.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Thank you for keeping your radio dial set here to Monday Night Talk, heard only on 95.9 WATD, and you have arrived at the final segment of the evening. And just a reminder, if you have missed a portion of any of our segments this evening, we do put them up on the website. They are available as a podcast, the complete show. We no longer kind of break it up with the whole show. We even give love to our sponsors where when we do a little bit of a segue from one segment to the other, you know, people who financially give us a little bit of love, and we give them a little love back on the podcast. So if you hear from Tiny and Son Glass or McGuigan's Pub or Signature Healthcare, well, there's a reason for it, because they're kind enough to sponsor our program. So joining me is Laura Fitzgerald Kemet, and she is with the Hanson Business Network, and we're going to talk a little bit about an upcoming fundraiser. This is taking place on St. Patty's Day, and this is going to be helping out the Panther Education Trust. Welcome back to Monday Night Talk, because you have been on here previously to talk a little bit about the Hanson Food Pantry.
I have. Thanks, Kevin. We really appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk about this event.
What exactly is this event? Again, this event is going to be taking place where?
Well, it's going to be taking place at the lovely Needles Lodge at Camp Kewaunee.
Ah.
If you haven't been there, which I know you have been,
yes.
But if some of your listeners haven't been there, it's a gorgeous old, Adirondack type of, venue. And it's really quite beautiful. It's on a pond in Hanson, and we're lucky. It's town-owned, and so the town has graciously offered the venue to us for no charge, because this is a fundraiser that we're doing for the school.
What is the idea of the Panther, the Educational Trust, and I believe also the Hanson PTO is part of this too?
Right. So this event is being sponsored by the Hanson Business Network, which is a group of businesses in town that have gotten together to network and support each other and learn and grow together and just generally create a positive business climate in the town of Hanson. And when we were doing our brainstorming for things that we wanted to accomplish this year, one of the things that resonated with everybody was giving back to the community. And you'll find throughout the network that these are people that have been incredibly generous over the years. And we started brainstorming about, who we wanted to give back to. And we decided that at this point, the schools were going to be our focus. So that said, we've got the Hanson PTO, which is a group of really dedicated volunteers. They do an awesome job. And then we've got the Panther Education Trust. Now, I happen to be the president of the Panther Education Trust, and the Panther Education Trust raises money and funds enrichment programs up at the Whitman-Hanson Regional High School versus Hanson PTO, which would be the middle school and the elementary school. So we're pretty much covering any kid that's in Hanson in the schools will somehow benefit from this fundraiser.
Talk to me. You look at today's the tough fiscal times. How important is it to have an organization like yours raising money to be able to help with programs that otherwise you might not see in a school district?
Well, it's pretty darn important. I don't want to overstate it, but I don't want to understate it either. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that wouldn't happen if it wasn't for all the volunteers that are raising money for the schools. Panther Education Trust, for instance, has funded nearly all of the Chromebooks that have been purchased up at the high school. And people might think that that's something that's covered under the technology budget, but when you get down to a bare-bones budget like we've been in, several years in a row, they're really trying to sharpen their pencil, they look to some of these fundraising organizations to fill the gap. And we're happy to step up and do that. And the Hanson PTO has done the same thing. They're supplying things that people might think that the school district would have the money to supply, even like general classroom supplies and that type of stuff. These guys are fundraising to do that. So it's pretty important. It is enrichment programs. We also bring in speakers and that type of things and extracurricular things that absolutely are not in the budget at all. But we're also helping with some of the fundamentals.
Okay. So we've given the cause for the fundraiser. Again, this is going to be on March 17th from 6:30 to 10. It'll be at the Needles Lodge at Camp Kewaunee. Tickets are $20. What are folks getting for their $20?
Well, they are getting a lot for their $20. We are going to have a boiled dinner that's going to be catered by Fork in the Road Deli. Lori Cook and her crew, who always do an awesome job, will be hooking us up. And that will include rolls and butter and coffee and dessert, and then, of course, your traditional, boiled dinner with, vegetables and meat and all that. And so you've got the meal, and that alone, if you went out on St. Patrick's Day night, you'd probably spend $20 a piece for all that.
Right.
But we're not stopping there.
Okay.
So we also have Bill Reedy and his wife, who are a very talented duo. Bill performs all over the South Shore. His specialty is Irish tunes, and he will be performing with his wife throughout the evening. And whenever there's a lull or Bill needs to take a break, we've got our DJ, Joe Campbell, who's from Hanson, and always steps up to help us on these types of things. So he'll be spinning Irish tunes. And if that's not enough, Kevin,
No, wait. Now, hold on. Hold on. Now, if you're going to be in show business, you got to do it right, okay? We're selling Ginsu nights. But wait, there's more. Go ahead, you do it. But wait, there's more.
I'll work on that.
Okay.
But wait, that's not all. We also have Irish step dancers coming to perform. We're not going to, have hours and hours of Irish step dancers. I don't want people to, to think that. But we're going to have a company that rents space from Boss Academy. Kathy Jo Boss is part of our Hanson Business Network,
right.
And she very graciously connected us with them. So they will be coming and performing. And then we also have, and I have to say, Kevin, but wait, that's not all. We also have a St. Patrick's Day photo booth, which is my personal favorite. And you might be asking yourself, what does that involve? It involves some really fun little props that people can use with a clover background.
Mm-hmm.
And, like Irish beards and Irish hats and tiaras and all kinds of Irish paraphernalia. To take photos with your friends and loved ones or even complete strangers to capture the moment and the fact that you are at this event. So I'm looking forward to it. I personally have had a lot of fun trying the props out at home and taking pictures, but that's a whole different story for a different day.
Now, I believe in your email, you told me that there's a limited number of tickets that they're going to be available at the door, so folks should get them early and often. That's why we're promoting this here on Monday Night Talk, to get the word out about this event, the St. Patty's fundraiser that's going to benefit the Panther Education Trust. If folks are going to wait until they get to the door, so be it. But if folks want to get their tickets in advance, what is the way that they can do that?
Sure. So we do have an Eventbrite event set up.
Okay.
And the best way to kind of get all of that information is if you visit the Panther Education Trust website, which is handily enough, panthereducationtrust.org. Right on there, right on the front page, there is a link to the Eventbrite, and it gives details about the event, and that will take you right there where you can purchase the tickets online. There will be a very limited number at the door. Of course, we're always going to sell them right up until the very minute that the event starts because it is a fundraiser. But because it's catered, we really don't have the availability of, the option of being able to say, hey, whoever shows up will accommodate them, because we want everybody to have sufficient amounts of food when they're there.
Definitely. And again, we are speaking with Laura Fitzgerald Kemet. She's not only the president of the Panther Education Trust, she's also a member of the Hanson Business Network, who is actually hosting this event. Talk to me about how important it is for local business to be involved in their community like the Hanson Business Network is.
Well, I think it's extremely important, not only, from the perspective of these are your customers that you're serving are in the same community that you're helping. And I kind of think of it as a karma, you're giving and you're getting back what you're giving.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think that we've got a responsibility, a social responsibility as businesses in a community to give back to the community that is supporting you and helping you. And we're really, really fortunate in Hanson. It is a tough climate to do business in because we're off the beaten path. It's not, we're not on a main drag. We're not in Hanover, some of the other towns that are right off the expressway. It takes a little bit to get to us. So we're all the more appreciative of anybody that makes that journey to do business with us. And, you know, we've got some really great long-standing businesses. We've got a good mix of you know, less mature businesses, people that are just starting out. And everybody's been supportive and really helpful and really on board with giving back to the community. I mean, to the person at the meeting, everybody was like, absolutely, we need to do this. And this will most likely be the first of what will end up being, you know, quite a few fundraisers that we'll do on behalf of the community. I could foresee quite easily that we'll probably end up doing one for the Hanson Food Pantry as well in the future.
Tell me, so as far as with the Panther Education Trust, if folks want to find out more information, let's say they want to do more than attend this event on March 17th, say they want to make a donation, do you utilize social media? Do you have a website? How are the ways folks could help if they have an extra dollar or two?
Yes, yes, and yes. So we, on our website, we do have a donate button. So again, that's PantherEducationTrust.org. And if you go there, prominently displayed in the upper right-hand corner is a yellow button that says donate. If you click on that, it will walk you through the steps to donate. We do have a Facebook presence as well, Panther Ed Trust, it's called. So if you like our page, then you'll get updates. And we're not obnoxious about giving updates. We try to be very judicious about using the page because we don't want to just fill up people's news feeds. So those are two good ways. The website and the Facebook page are generally kept up to date and, you know, and are a good way to find out about what's going on. And you know, if you're interested in joining us, we generally have meetings that are posted there so you can find out when our next meeting is. It's a low group. You know, it's not a group that you need to be intimidated about joining. It's a group of people who just want to help the schools. You know, a lot of them did PTO before or give in other ways in the community. And it's a bunch of doers. We don't just talk. We really like to get out there and do it. We have a lot of fun with our fundraisers. It's a fun group. It's really a fun group to work with.
Well, if you're heading it up, it must be fun.
Well, thank you, Kevin. I'll try to live up to that.
Oh, that's a lot to live up to if I'm bestowing that upon you. But we thank you very much for reaching out to Monday Night Talk and, you know, seeking an opportunity to at least promote the event, get folks out, mobilize for a great event that's, you know, it's basically, again, helping when it comes to enrichment programs. We look, you know, the governor just released his budget for fiscal 2018. We know that, you know, that one of the things that they're always fighting for up at the State House is local aid. And when we talk local aid, it's not just necessarily Chapter 90 money to pave your roads, but for education and making sure that not only public schools, but school districts are funded and that students that, you know, per pupil amounts are sufficient. And it's, you know, it costs are always growing. So, again, this event coming up on March 17th. It's going to be at Camp Kwani, the Needles Lounge, the Needles Lodge, not the Lounge, Lodge, as Laura was explaining to us. $20. It gets you a great boiled dinner. You get coffee, rolls, dessert, and then you get to be entertained by the South Coast Rambler himself, Billy Reedy, and his missus. And then when Bill wants to sit down and have some boiled dinner, DJ Joe Campbell will be spinning some Irish tunes. And you also can get your photo taken in a St. Paddy's Day photo booth, all for $20. So if you have a chance, please check it out. They do have an Eventbrite site set up. And again, Laura, what is that Eventbrite site?
If you visit our PantherEducationTrust.org, so it's PantherEducationTrust.org website, all that information will be right on the front page.
Laura, I want to thank you so much for joining us this evening, and we'll look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thanks a lot, Kevin. Take care.
You got it. All right, well, that's all the Monday Night Talk that we have here. We thank you very much for tuning in, and until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great night.